This podcast is brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Keep Joy on air by becoming a member, a subscriber, or donate. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.
The National LGBTI Health Alliance held its 8th conference, Health in Difference 2013, Our Bodies, Our Minds, in Melbourne in April 2013. Joy 94.9, Australia's only radio station for our diverse communities, is proud to partner with the Alliance to bring you this recording of the 2013 conference.
Our next presenter is Judy Finn. Judy's presenting evidence-based approaches for stigma reduction in depression and anxiety. Judy has held senior positions in some of Australia's peak non-profit organisations, agencies including Beyond Blue, the National Depression Initiative, Strategics Project Lead and Program Director in Public Health, National Heart Foundation of Australia as Director of Cardiovascular Health Programs, Government and Stakeholder Relations, and the Cancer Council of Victoria as a quick campaign and various positions there. Judy's academic background and expertise lie in the areas of education, public health and management. Most recently, Judy's work has focused on the development of an organisational-wide strategy to reduce stigma for people with depression and anxiety. Informed by the published evidence and international practice, a key goal is to assist Beyond Blue addressing this issue, an issue universally acknowledged as a critical barrier to seeking help for people with depression and anxiety. Thank you, Judy.
Thank you, Ben. As Ben mentioned, my job today is to give you an overview of the stigma evidence, particularly as it pertains to depression and anxiety. But when we use the word stigma, it resonates with everybody in a different way. So I thought perhaps to get us on the same page, I'd start with a definition from the World Health Organization. Stigma being a mark of shame, disgrace, or disapproval which results in an individual feeling rejected, discriminated against, and excluded from participating in a number of different areas of society. Now, without getting too theoretical, it is important to think about the different ways stigma can manifest. And if we think about it in terms of ourselves, self-stigma refers to the beliefs that we hold in relation to ourselves if we were to experience depression and anxiety. It's the kind of feeling that says, I'm somehow weaker or I'm a lesser person because I have this mental illness. Perceived stigma is the stigma that we believe other people hold. So those feelings of inadequacy, if we feel, for example, that if people know we're suffering a mental illness, then they will think less of us. Personal or public stigma refers to that kind of stigma that we see in other people, the stigma that we feel exists in society at large. And structural stigma refers to those stigmas that are institutionalised in our society, such as discrimination in housing or employment against people with a mental illness, or even in things as basic as buying insurance products where people with a mental illness can be charged more or even refused insurance cover, and which Beyond Blue feels is not acceptable. Why tackle stigma? Beyond Blue's mission, as we heard from Nell, is around depression and anxiety. And for the first 10 years of Beyond Blue's life, we really focused on awareness raising, particularly in relation to the signs and symptoms of depression and anxiety and where to get help. But of course, if you think about stigma being something that precludes people from talking about their mental illness, then we can see that stigma is a critical barrier to help seeking. And so therefore, if you like, it's the elephant in the room. It's the thing that we've got to address if we want people to act on our messages around help seeking. Of course, it follows then that stigma will be a barrier to treatment adherence or compliance with medical treatment, particularly when it comes to medications. Stigma is, of course, significant in suicide prevention. Not only the people who survive a suicide event will experience stigma, but the families of people who die by suicide will suffer extreme stigma. And this, again, is, of course, a barrier to their own recovery and coming to terms with the event. Stigma inhibits disclosure, that is, people's ability to talk about their mental illness, and therefore, from a Beyond Blue perspective, it suppresses our efforts to normalise depression. And when I say normalise, that is to manage the understanding that depression and anxiety are very, very common occurrences in people's life, and it is something that statistically speaking is probably very real to all of us. Either we ourselves might have had an experience of depression or anxiety, or we would know somebody close to us who will experience depression and anxiety in their lifetime. And some people would argue that the stigma associated with mental illness is one reason why mental illness is, or mental health is, receives less funding than, say, physical health. Now, in taking on this topic on behalf of Beyond Blue, I had the opportunity not only to look at the published literature, but to speak to some of our colleagues in other OECD countries who've spent a long time working in this space. It became very, very quickly apparent, and this won't be a surprise to anyone here, that stigma is pervasive and it's deeply entrenched in our society. Stigma reduction is not one of those public health activities that's an easy win. It's not an easy goal to achieve, and some stigma and discrimination will always exist. We will not be able to change the attitudes, the knowledge, and the behaviours of everybody. Stigma reduction is going to be resource intensive, it's going to be very slow, and it's going to be very hard to measure. And for a group who is accountable for its funding, measuring our outcomes is really critical, and this is something that we've had to grapple with. However, looking at the glass half full rather than the glass half empty, when we talk to people with an experience of depression or anxiety in relation to stigma, we find strikingly consistent findings. We do have a body of scientific evidence that we can draw from that comes from the international experience of our colleagues. And the approaches that the scientific evidence suggests align with the gut feel of the people who are experiencing depression and anxiety, so we can take some comfort from that. Whilst we can't generalise across the learnings from other public health initiatives, such as the things we've learnt through 20 years of tobacco control or campaigns aimed at encouraging seatbelt use or sun protection or whatever, there are some things that we can apply, some learnings. And as I mentioned earlier, we have got the benefit of the experience of organisations in Canada, Scotland, the US and New Zealand in terms of informing our approach. So these are things that give us heart. Most importantly, though, very recently we're starting to see some published evidence using very rigorously validated tools that show that with comprehensive approaches, you can reduce stigma in a population-wide way. So my job then was to take what was in the literature, to consider what we've learnt from overseas, and to look at that and see what the implications were for a group like Beyond Blue. And bearing in mind the time that we've got, I'll speak to some of these slides, some very quickly and a couple in a little more detail. But first and foremost, we know that it's really important for an anti-stigma intervention to work if we speak specifically about depression or anxiety as opposed to mental illness in general. And that's quite simply because people are less stigmatising in relation to depression and anxiety than they are to people who have more severe mental illness. So whilst that is unfair on face value, it does mean that for Beyond Blue, we're starting with a little bit of a head start. We also know that for Beyond Blue, if we're going to address stigma, we've got to change the way we've done our work. Simply raising awareness around the signs and symptoms of depression and anxiety and where to get help will not in and of themselves change people's attitudes or knowledge or discriminatory behaviours. We know that we've gone a long way in terms of changing the public's understanding around depression, and that there's very good evidence to show that we have been successful in increasing people's knowledge of where to get help, but we haven't achieved the same successes in changing stigmatising attitudes and stigmatising beliefs, and that's the key reason why we've got such a focus on it for the next phase of our planning. Again, taking learnings from other public health areas, we know that simply changing people's knowledge won't do anything about their attitudes or their behaviours, and we need to address both attitude and behaviour if we're going to address all the components of stigma. And the components that I'm referring to are knowledge, which is ignorance or misinformation, people's stereotypical attitudes, or acts of discrimination which manifest in people's behaviours. The best way to target an anti-stigma intervention is to understand the real-life experience of the people whose lives you're trying to affect, and that will be something that anyone who's worked in the public health space will be acutely aware of. That is that importance of putting the person who you're trying to affect at the heart of your work, so market research, market research, market research, and involving representatives of your target audience at every stage of your program planning process. approaches need to be comprehensive. Things that focus just on individual stigma will not change the society in which we live and those environmental or structural stigmas. We need to look at key groups, we need to look at target populations, and we need to look at opportunities for intervention across the lifespan. Again, as with any other population-based approach to any population health issue, we need to work across from an approach that's both top-down, that is nationally led, and bottom-up, that is locally led. One thing that sets stigma apart from some of the other public health issues that I've had the opportunity to work on is the importance of the local context in the way stigma plays out. And in a few minutes, we'll be talking about the importance of contact-based approaches in a stigma reduction effort. But what's come out very consistently in the literature is that local context is a key success factor in changing community attitudes and driving stigma reduction. Now, the hallmark of all independently evaluated and successful stigma programs is what we call a contact-based approach. And this is where meaningful contact or interaction takes place between people with an experience of mental illness and those who may not have had an experience of mental illness. That contact can be one-on-one, one-to-many, or virtual. And contact-based approaches are most effective when the following conditions are in play. That is, contact needs to be between people who perceive themselves as equal. It needs to occur in the context of active cooperation and the pursuit of shared goals. It needs to take place where there's an opportunity for interaction and discussion and where there's a coexisting relationship. The messenger and the message need to be culturally appropriate. And this contact or this interaction needs to have the potential to disabuse people of common myths such as dangerousness and impulsiveness. And they are some of the myths that are sometimes put out there in the media around people with mental illness. The presenter also needs to be credible and challenge the stereotypes that are often held, such as perhaps someone in the workplace with depression or anxiety as being lazy or incompetent. We all know that those things aren't true. But through meaningful social contact between people who meet these criteria, that is where people perceive themselves as equal and where there is meaningful dialogue, we have the ability to create empathy and to break down some of the stereotypes that go to the heart of stigma and discrimination. Stigma-mindful communication is a phrase that we've termed to describe the way we need to think about how we portray people with mental illness in the media and in the literature and in any of our communications with the general public. I'm sure you'd all be aware that media depictions are critically important in terms of how people with mental illness are portrayed. But also equally important, and I've put this quote up here, that real-life narratives that touch the heart and mind of the listener and which offer a sense of hope and recovery increase positive emotional connection, they build empathy, and they serve to break down stereotypes. And I think that phrase encapsulates some of the things that can be achieved when we include contact-based approaches as part of our population health strategy to change the knowledge, attitudes and behaviours around stigma. Important to note, of course, the research and evaluation base specific not only to stigma but particularly to depression and anxiety and stigma is limited. It is something that we have as a priority to address, and clearly, that's important then that not only we conduct the research but that we disseminate those findings. And then last but not least, a continuous and a sustained approach is going to be required. And it's been suggested that really to achieve enduring change in the stigma space, we need effort over a generation. And I think if you reflect on other population health approaches, again, just to refer to some that are well known, such as sun protection or tobacco control, if you think back and compare the attitudes, the knowledge and behaviour of your parents in relation to those issues, and you compare those to the attitudes, knowledge and behaviours of young people today around those issues, you'll be able to see there has been at least a generation of effort in those domains. And that's the kind of horizon, time horizon we've got to look at if we want to change attitudes and reduce stigma. I mentioned earlier that there is some emerging evidence that demonstrates categorically the effect of comprehensive stigma reduction programs. And as recently as in the April edition of the British Journal of Psychiatry and the May edition of the American Journal of Public Health, you will find some of the best and most thorough research, which gives an organisation like Beyond Blue great heart and great courage and the evidence that we need to justify our investment in stigma reduction. I like to emphasise that this is a new area of work for us, but if you watch this space, you will see, particularly over the coming period and as I say, into the next 5 to 10 years of Beyond Blue, a greatly enhanced stigma reduction focus that does complement the work we've done around depression and anxiety awareness raising. Thank you very much.
You have been listening to a recording from the Health Indifference 2013 conference held in Melbourne in April 2013. For more information about the National LGBTI Health Alliance, head to lgbtihealth.org.au. And for more information on Joy 94.9, Australia's only radio station for our diverse communities, explore joy.org.au.
Thanks for listening to another Joy podcast brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Help us keep Joy on air. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.